Hey, I'm Micah.
And I'm Jen.
From 1994 to 1996, Jen lived in the middle of nowhere, Montana.
But not by choice.
She was sent to a therapeutic boarding school.
I had some issues.
While there, she performed hard labor.
There was also a lot of forced exercise.
Went through daily, hours-long group therapy.
That shit didn't work.
And when she left, she was left with some holes in her life.
Holes?
One of the holes was her pop culture hole.
Yeah, I missed a lot of shit.
And that's a hole we can fill. So put some go juice in your jet ski. It's time for...
I never saw that.
In a world where only Kevin Costner drinks his own pee.
In a world where people wear seaweed for clothes.
In a world where Dennis Hopper was told this was a comedy.
In a world where Dennis Hopper gets his eye shot right out of his head.
In a world where Mad Max has a boat instead of a car.
In a world in which children have tattoos.
In a world where no one has a backstory. That's right, we're doing a deep dive into Waterworld. Get it?
Mm-mm.
Oh.
I don't get it.
It's a joke.
Oh, deep dive, like deep dive into water?
Waterworld, yeah.
Yeah, no, I get that. I just thought maybe there were... layers I was missing, but that was... Yeah, no, I get it. That was really funny.
Waterworld, starring Kevin Costner, directed by Kevin Costner, produced by Kevin Costner, edited by Kevin Costner.
Seriously?
No, but there were issues. We'll talk about them. We did those hilarious and funny intros because the movie opens with a voiceover by Hal Douglas narrating. And I can just... Should I do it right now?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is how the movie opens. The future... excuse me, let me start that again.
The future. The polar ice caps have melted, covering the Earth with water. Those who survived have adapted to a new world.
Oh my God, that was so good, Micah.
Yeah, I've been practicing.
It sounded exactly like that guy you said.
Yeah.
Wow.
Thanks.
Impressive. Yeah, it started with that narration, and I just thought, this just feels like a trailer, because that's all it said.
I wish it had just been a trailer.
In this movie, Kevin Costner has gills.
Mm-hmm. Behind his ears, because that's where gills are.
And webbed feet.
Yeah.
So I was very anxious throughout the movie to find out whether he also had a webbed penis.
Did you think there was going to be a dong shot?
Like, it was something I thought about a lot.
Like,
What's that movie? I mean, Boogie Nights.
Like Boogie Nights?
No. I just thought that maybe there, like, it might be alluded to. Or maybe he would just come right out and say, my penis is webbed. You know what I mean?
Maybe. That might be in the director's cut. I'm not sure.
He's a quicker swimmer because he doesn't have that thing flopping around.
Just because it's more aerodynamic. It's not like he's using that webbing to propel himself. Like, it's a prehensile penis and he can move the whole webbing. It's like an extra fan in the middle, kind
of. I don't know what any of that means,
like,
but
a penis peller?
I think it makes him faster.
Okay. I'm glad we established that. So this film came out July 28th, 1995. Jen, do you happen to remember what you were doing on that exact day?
Yes.
You were watching the premiere, the red carpet premiere.
Of Waterworld.
Waterworld, I bet.
I actually had no idea this movie existed until...
Lucky you.
Much later. And then I avoided watching it. On July 28th, 1995. Now, of course, I don't remember exact dates. But around that time, all of us at the therapeutic boarding school... I need to come up with a name for the school. Do you have any ideas?
Yes, I do.
Let's hear one.
I have a lot. I mean,
yeah,
I can't think of one right now, but I do have a lot. Once they get rolling, we're not going to be able to stop this train.
How do you have a lot, but you can't think of one?
They're all in here, but, you know, they have to be honed and perfected.
So you don't
before
have
I say
any
them.
Then.
No, I have one. Wilson's Finishing Academy.
I'm going to call it Goose Valley School.
Goose
right
Valley
now,
School.
Just for this.
What about, let's see, it's Montana. What about, like, Grizzly School? Grizzly Bear Fighting School.
Okay. Anyway,
Kung
let's
Fu
just,
Panda School.
We'll just come back to this idea another time with the names. But
Polar Bear Wrestling Academy. I kind of got off on a...
Are you done?
I'll come back.
No.
Around well, if you no, want to give
I
me time.
I kind of want to make sure you don't come back
okay.
to that.
Okay.
Let's just...
We're moving on.
Pause.
All right.
Get it? You're talking about bears.
Oh, I do.
That's a good one. Anyways, the fuck was I talking about?
The name of your school. Yeah.
Around this time, I was on a bike trip with the school where we went to the Rocky Mountain Front. The Rocky Mountain Front is exactly what it sounds like.
A militia? It sounds like a militia.
It's just the front of the Rocky Mountains. It's gorgeous. My dad came with us, so I assume it was a dad's retreat. There were probably other dads, but I don't really remember that. What I remember is that this was the trip during which the headmaster of the school decided to call me out in front of everyone. And this is how I ended up being placed on work crew, which I've talked about in a few other episodes. But so my family counselor and I had worked out some things I wanted to talk with my dad about. So, because we did group therapy every single day. And when a parent comes to one of these retreats, you have to have approval from the counselors about what you're going to address with them. So I had come up with some topics I wanted to talk with my dad about, and my family counselor approved them, but my family counselor wasn't on this trip. And so we're in group, and I tried to bring up the topics that I thought were the okay topics to bring up, and the headmaster just interrupted me and started yelling at me about how full of shit I was, and that's when all this shit came out about our social structure, which I've also talked about before, but what that meant was that I had friends, and...
How dare you?
They called anything that threatened the uniformity of the group, or really what they're afraid of is mutiny, right? Like, so anything that is a threat to their authority and absolute... I mean, again, this is like Scientology, man.
Yeah.
Like, you're required to narc on each other.
Did
is
they
what it is.
Frame this as a, like, as being required for therapeutic reasons? Like, it was part of working through stuff, or did they just...
Well, kind of. I mean, but it was really just a punishment.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, they try to frame it that way, so... Because I had friends and maybe they were scared that we wouldn't rat on each other, which would then reduce their power. And
right. But they would probably say, like, you won't be accountable and you won't hold each other. Like,
yeah, that's exactly what they would say. That you're too close and you're not going to hold each other accountable.
And you're not going to be honest.
You're letting each other get away with shit. And I don't even know what the fuck they were talking about, because I was not getting away with anything. I'll tell you that right now. I mean, I wish I would have been. I wish I would have, like, done some shit or something, but I didn't. I didn't do anything wrong. So, anyway, it was a horrible, horrible experience for me. Like, it was very traumatizing. I was deeply ashamed and embarrassed and felt like I was this horrible person, because that's basically what this man said to me. And my dad's there. Too.
And you were trying, right? You were like, you had gotten these things approved and you thought these were
legitimate issues. I was doing what I was supposed to be fucking doing.
Had to work out and you were really trying.
Yeah.
And...
But this is what the headmaster did to some of us.
Now,
and I was one of them.
Do you think he ambushed you on purpose? Like, he knew that those were approved questions, but he was just going to give you shit? Or do you think there was a miscommunication or...
No. He doesn't give a fuck what the approved questions were.
He
give a fuck.
He was just waiting to...
I mean, I don't know whether it was like a planned thing. For all I know, it was just like in that moment, he just decided I was full of shit. I mean, it did seem sometimes like he just did that sometimes, like almost for his own entertainment. But anyway, it was horrible. It was so fucking horrible. And of course, all these people, all these other girls start coming out and agreeing with him, because that's what you do. And I have, you know, I have absolutely no resentment toward any other person who was there with me, because that's what you did. You had to do that.
Right. The only social structure that was allowed or approved of was like bowing
was
to
drinking the
cult leader,
Kool-Aid.
Basically.
Yeah. It was drinking the Kool-Aid. Anyway, it was horrible. Yeah. So anyway, my dad was there, and when we got back to the school, that's when I was put on work crew for 5 weeks. But what's interesting is that my dad's experience on that trip is the complete opposite of my experience, which for me personally, that just points to how little my parents noticed how much pain I was in at this school. But it's also understandable. I just want to make a quick comment, which is that I have asked my parents several times if they want to be a guest on this show. And the reason I've asked them that is because I don't want to, I want their perspective to be heard. I do think it's important. I think that my side isn't the only side here. But anyway, they have declined thus far. So they obviously have a different take on almost everything I'm talking about, but they also weren't there for most of it. So, but my mom believes that I'm alive because they sent me to Montana. She still thinks that. So,
which could be true. We've talked about that before.
It's impossible to prove.
Right.
Anyway, what my dad remembers is that when we were driving home in the van, I laid my head on his shoulder, and he, for him, you know, for the first time in quite a while, he felt like he had his daughter back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he felt like I was vulnerable enough with him to be like his little girl. Mm-hmm. And so I really do understand how significant that was for him and why that is his perspective on it. But here's how I'm going to wrap this back into Waterworld.
Oh, yeah?
Sorta.
Was there a flood or something?
No. Oh. The Dances with Wolves music is what we were listening to in the van.
Really?
During that time. And so now every time my dad hears that music, yeah, that's what he thinks about.
Like the orchestral score? Like,
yeah, the score.
Wow.
I mean, it's lovely. Like if you're driving through the mountains.
Yeah.
You know, and just, it is like you laugh, but it was a moving experience. And so.
Oh, right. I can imagine even just like being on a road trip and driving through Montana and putting that on. It's like.
You can't help
epic
but.
And yeah, exactly. Sweeping and.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, so Dances with Wolves, Kevin Costner, Waterworld.
Oh, he was in both.
Kevin Costner.
Oh, I see.
You
now.
See the connection?
Yes, I get it.
So now we're back to Waterworld. A world.
Can we talk about Montana more? Because that might be less traumatic than Waterworld. Sorry, that was a bad joke in poor taste.
So go.
I just want to point out that people can probably pick up on how I'm feeling about Waterworld from some of my snide remarks.
Well, it's how you feel about most things.
No, that's not true. It's just.
It's how you feel about a lot of things.
Most things between 1994 and 1996 that existed. No, I thought it was interesting in doing a little research about this movie that many of the headlines I read, because the 20th anniversary of this film was just a few years ago in, let me do the math, 2015? Yeah, that's right. I read several headlines and several articles about how this movie was way better than you think it is because it was such a flop. It was such a box office disaster.
I read one of those today, too.
I just can't believe that there were more than one written, but there were several.
Well, here's the thing that did strike me is that one of the ones I read, well, the one I read, not one of the ones, the one I read was talking about how part of the reason the movie was such a flop and got such bad reviews is because the budget was enormous. It was
the most expensive film ever made
at that time. Yeah. And so people's expectations, people knew that going into it, and people's expectations were huge and impossible to live up to is what this person was saying. And, you know, to be fair, this person was like, it's not like Waterworld deserves to be on any list of greatest movies ever.
Right.
But, you know, it did serve its purpose. It was an action movie. It was entertaining. It, you know, there were some cool things about it.
Right. It was like a summer blockbuster. That's what they wanted to make. But they wanted to sell toys. They wanted us to be talking about this world they created.
They wanted to sell toys.
Yeah, like
what are
people
you talking about?
People talk about Star Wars, and they wanted to create this huge blockbuster that people would talk about for years and was going to be amazing.
They didn't make any toys, did they?
Yeah, I think they did.
What did they make? Like little Kevin Costner dolls?
Little Dennis Hopper with a really real gross eye.
Are you being serious? Because I don't know. I can't tell. I don't think they made toys.
No, but they wanted to. They wanted this to be a huge, like, franchise even, maybe.
I did read, and I don't know, I did not look at the year that this was written, but that Waterworld 2 is apparently a thing might happen.
Really?
But that might have been written 20 years ago. I don't know.
Oh, man.
I don't care about the money part. I just thought that that was interesting that's tied to people's expectations, because of course it is. Like, right. You're spending, I think it was like $1.75 million, billion dollars?
No, $175 million.
Oh.
$1.75 million would be if, like, we made a movie.
Whatever it was, it caused a lot of buzz.
Mm-hmm.
And it did not live up to the buzz.
No, it didn't. And there are a lot of reasons for that. Number one, I do have to say, caveat, I have liked Kevin Costner in things, but the number one reason this movie sucked was because of Kevin Costner.
Yes. Agreed.
It was horrible.
I people love Kevin Costner. I did when I was a kid. Like, I loved Dances with Wolves. I loved Field of Dreams. I loved Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves.
Right. And if you compare it to those, he was the same character in Robin Hood, basically. Like, the same. He did the same amount of acting, which was just...
No, no, no. You are wrong.
You're right. There was a love story there that he was...
No, he was a totally different character.
Really into. But he just... He was terrible in this.
He is painful. So what he was good at... So he is this sort of classic, like, kicking ass and taking names sort of action anti-hero, right? Like, he's... When he's quiet, it's sort of like Keanu Reeves in some movies where it's like, if he didn't talk, he'd be great. That's how I felt about this movie. He's good in the action sequences. He's good in the parts where he's not talking. The problem is when he has to deliver lines that are supposed to be meaningful in any way, it just falls flat for me.
See, I think part of the reason it falls flat is because he's playing this as a loner character, literally, who's out on a boat by himself 99% of the time,
mm-hmm.
and doesn't have any use for other people, and doesn't want to be around other people, and doesn't know how to act around them, doesn't talk much. He just carried that so far. The things I've liked him in, he was great in Silverado.
Silverado is the one thing that I can say he was great in.
Yeah, and he's been great in a lot of other things too, I'm sure. He is an actor that has range. It's just in this film, he was so... I didn't give a shit about him. I didn't care about him. So when he said those meaningful things...
Yeah.
It didn't feel like it was coming from anywhere. I had no way to identify with him because they gave no backstory. There was no exposition whatsoever other than the polar ice caps melted.
Yeah.
The world is wet now.
I took a note on that. I was like, what the fuck? That was the opening? That was the narration that was supposed to explain this shit to us? It really is very clearly going for... It's just an action movie. I mean,
right.
There's no... None of the characters...
There's just a lot of explosions.
Yeah, you're right. No one has a backstory at all.
No. Except Enola, a little bit. But it's mysterious. And that's also not explained. But at least she has a past. No one else talks about their past personally at all.
For a long time in the movie, I was like, how fucking long ago was it that there was still land?
Right. There's also some weird timeline issues. Because they still have a lot of things. Like, they're still... Gasoline, they call it go juice because they've lost the word gasoline somehow.
Go juice.
There's still
cute
canned meat. It's called smeet in this movie, not spam,
which I also found very funny.
Because spam was like, you ain't ruining our brand. They still have cigarettes and stuff like tobacco. Somebody's smoking at different times, which I think is weird. Like, how long would that stuff survive? There are jet skis and boats and airplanes that still function and they know how to use them.
Right.
But they've lost these linguistic things. And Kevin Costner has evolved into fucking fish man. He has webbed feet and gills. How long does that take?
Let's pause for a minute. Before we get into all that, because I have a feeling this episode is going to have a pretty negative slant. but let me say this episode was requested by one of our Patreon supporters, Tasha. So If you are a person who wants to be a patron at $5 or more, one of the perks of that is that you get to pick an episode.
And then we get to make fun of one of your favorite movies.
Well, right. And also, by the way, those of you out there who are like, excuse me, I give you $5 a month and I haven't picked one yet. Don't worry. I haven't forgotten you. So anyway, Tasha chose Waterworld. And I don't know. We got to tread carefully because we don't want to alienate our fans and listeners. But just, we also want to say that just because you get to pick an episode doesn't mean we're going to be nice about it. So, but I do have a couple other things I want to say that are the good things about it, mm-hmm. because then I have a lot of bad things.
Okay.
One, I already said he is a good sort of strong and silent classic mm-hmm. action figure. Yeah.
Should have been.
The other thing that's really cool about it, and what I assume cost so much money for some reason, is that it was actually filmed on the water.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't in like a little pond on the studio lot.
I think they did probably do some filming in that lake pond thing at Universal Studios. But yes, you're right. For most of the principal photography was in Hawaii.
The water looked really good.
Yeah.
There was no land until the very, very end. And it really did have the feeling like you were out in the middle of the fucking ocean.
An island, the atoll.
Yeah, thing. So they built, yeah.
They actually built two of them because there were storms. One of them sank.
Oh.
So they built it again.
Yeah, and they didn't. So the things I thought were cool about the movie, are never explained. Like the whole, like, how do humans live on the water? I mean, and so, yeah, they had built this sort of island out of, I don't know what. I don't know how it floated. I don't know why it floated. There was no
balloons, a whole bunch of little balloons.
Kind of explanation of that, which irritated me because that part was interesting to me. He also had a bunch of really cool little contraptions.
Oh, yeah. His boat was like a
little things that he had invented to
Rube Goldberg machine. It was awesome.
Yeah. One of them is that he sanitizes his own piss and drinks it.
Apparently.
And he loves it.
They were supposed to show that more in the
him drinking piss
cut, longer cut. No, other people doing that too.
Drinking piss?
Yeah, because that's the first shot. Okay, so the very first shot of the film is a voiceover that you heard me recreate with a really terrible CGI globe that was not spinning.
Oh my God, that part was weird.
I don't think it was spinning at all, which is weird.
It looked like it was like claymation or something.
Yeah,
like
it was
made of clay.
And then the water slowly rises and you see, oh, it's a water world.
It's water world.
The next shot is behind Kevin Costner, between his legs, you see him peeing. And then it pans up and he pumps this little machine and he pulls it like out of a glass and takes a couple swigs and then gives some to his little lime plant, his lime tree. Mm-hmm. Which I do have to say, very good gardening on Kevin Costner's part, because that was like the Charlie Brown Christmas tree of lime trees. It
Where
was
do you get the fucking dirt?
Tiny. And the limes
were huge
and normal sized.
So that was cool. And then, I mean, I wasn't bored, I guess.
It moves along.
I wasn't bored. Like, it accomplished the purpose of being entertaining. Lastly, there were two people that made this movie. Tina Majorino,
mm-hmm.
who played the kid.
Enola,
who was also Deb from Napoleon Dynamite, if you've seen that.
Yes.
She was rad and is rad. And Dennis Hopper. Hopper, I thought to myself and wrote to myself several times, was by far the best part of this movie.
Interestingly.
Those are all the good things I have to say.
That's funny because this movie was nominated for 4 Razzies. The like worst movie awards, you know?
Really?
It only won one. The other ones were like best, like worst picture, worst actor.
Don't tell me Dennis Hopper won
it
for being the worst actor?
Worst supporting actor for Dennis Hopper, yeah.
Well, fuck that.
Which is weird because I had the same feeling. Like, he was funny. It didn't match with the rest of the movie, really, but he played, like, this funny villain and he was just...
Well, it's bad because the whole fucking thing is very bad. Like, you can't blame that on Dennis Hopper. Dennis Hopper brought life to that movie. Without him, there was nothing.
It is like he was being directed by a different person, though, and he had a different script, like, with smiley faces on it and stuff. Because he was telling jokes the whole time and making jokes.
He brought humor. Dude, I need to take that up with the Razzie people. Because that honestly, like...
He was not the worst part of this film.
Are you kidding me? For me, at least, he was the best part.
Yeah,
it was cheesy as fuck.
Like, yes.
Everything about it. In fact, in the beginning, when we're first introduced to Dennis Hopper, and he's like the villain, I guess, but hold on, and I'll tell you what I think about that in a minute. I thought he was awful at first. I don't know how, like, it's so strange to me to make a movie that spends so much time and effort and energy and focus on special effects and cinematography and then have just the shittiest writing and dialogue, just the fucking, I don't know. I don't understand that.
Yeah, I mean, different people do those things. So it's not like one person was doing the writing and then doing the special effects, you know?
Thanks, Micah. Thank you for explaining the film industry to me.
There's only so much money to go around. They spent all the money on explosions and Kevin Costner and those gills. Did you see those gills?
You know,
those looked real.
You know what this movie was like? This is like if Pirates of the Caribbean super sucked and starred Kevin Costner.
So you mean Pirates of the Caribbean 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 12 starring Kevin Costner?
Yeah.
Okay. Joss Whedon was brought in to punch up the script a little bit. Must have been pretty early in his career, I'm guessing. But he described it as 7 weeks of hell.
Oh, awesome.
The production was just littered with horrible mishaps. I mean, the atoll sank. They apparently had to bring in extra steel from somewhere else because they used all the steel that was available in Hawaii.
But, like, they still went for it, which is, like...
Oh, they just kept going.
Obnoxious and disgusting when you think about it.
Oh, yeah. Gambler's fallacy. They were just like, we're in it this much. We got to keep going.
No, it's just that there's endless money for this kind of shit. Yeah. Like, they could have taken that money that they sank into trying again and trying again and, like, fed the homeless, like, for a month, all of the homeless people in L.A. You know what I mean?
I mean, they did in a way, Jen, if you think about it, because they fed them, they entertained them. Kevin Costner needed to tell a story, Jen. He nourished people's souls with this wonderful tale of a world that's very wet.
It's very wet. There's a lot of water in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot of water.
Apparently, there was also a lot of conflict between the director, Kevin Reynolds, and Kevin Costner. I think Costner was a producer on this, and so there are differing stories, but I think Reynolds was also editing it, and he got fired part of the way through, and some people say that Kevin Costner just re-edited the whole thing, and that's the movie that came out. There have been director's cuts that came out that were way longer and included a lot more people peeing and drinking it. Another thing that was included in one of the director's cuts, I think, was at the very end when they find dry land. Right after the Mariner sails off, they find a plaque that says, on this date in whatever, 1953, Sir Edmund Hillary climbed Mount Everest. Like, there's a plaque on the top of Mount Everest all of a sudden? What the hell? And that's where they are, because that's the only point that would be high enough that would be above the water.
Oh. Well, that makes sense.
So, there were a lot of problems with the production.
The movie is very dark, actually. Yeah. It is very disturbing for many reasons. And the music did not fit.
Yeah, it sticks out a lot.
At all. At the beginning. After that, I didn't notice it. So I guess maybe it got better or I just adjusted.
I don't know. There were times during big action sequences where there was this... Like, I couldn't decide. Is it trying to be an action movie where we'd usually hear a lot of percussion and things that are more rhythmic and then they'd have this sweeping orchestral score come up like and swell as he's sliding down a zipline he made to catch an airplane, you know, for example. So if somehow you haven't seen Waterworld like Jen hadn't, we'll do a quick recap of the plot with some interesting points. I think it's pretty simple. The polar ice caps melted.
Everyone lives on the water now.
Reversed. They threw that in one moment, but didn't explain it well. We don't know why that happened, but it's important because everyone lives on the water and there's a girl with a tattoo on her back. A little girl. Who tattoos a map on the back of a little girl?
Yeah, which is never fucking addressed.
It's weird. So nobody knows what it says because it's in like this mishmash of Chinese and Japanese characters, but they decode it and figure out it's coordinates to dry land. So they're all trying to find it.
Right, because everyone's like, how do we find dry land? So that's, I assume, because it's been several generations now that people have lived on the water. So apparently this is all people have been doing for hundreds of years, is trying to figure out how to find dry land.
Except I don't know if that's
I think accurate. It's very odd that someone tattooed this girl. We never find out who it was.
We do. Or why. Or at the very end. We'll get there.
Oh, fuck. What? Oh, Jesus. Just making an ass of myself again. But it's just that...
No, you're not. It was confusing. And it wasn't explained. So the Smokers are this band of...
They're Dennis Hopper's...
Gang, basically. People. Yeah. They have jet skis and airplanes and boats.
And their base is the Exxon Valdez. And yes. There's a picture of that captain guy who fucking destroyed the ocean. And they, like, worship him.
And it's really, really funny.
It is actually kind of funny. Like, he's like their god, sort of.
St. Joe, we're close. After centuries of shame.
They outfitted the Exxon Valdez with oars, like galley oars. At one point, Dennis Hopper is like, we got to chase the Mariner. That's Kevin Costner's character, is just called the Mariner.
He has no name.
They are chasing him because they think he's after dry land. And so Kevin Costner blew up all their oil. Or is that before that? I don't even know. Anyway, a whole bunch of oars come out of the side of the Exxon Valdez and they start fucking rowing it. I don't think that would work.
It's pretty big for rowing.
Yeah. I don't think it's moving super fast doing that.
Kevin Costner shoots out Dennis Hopper's eye. That was pretty awesome, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. I guess we're supposed to be happy about that. Or there
was
a
fire. Wasn't it?
No, oh, no. Someone shot his eye out.
Kevin Costner didn't shoot him.
Well, someone did.
If you'll notice the arterial nature of the blood coming from the hole in my head, you can assume that we're all having a real lousy day.
There's a gunner on a boat. And they're just shoveling bullets into this big machine gun. And Kevin Costner harpooned the boat as they were taking off and then pulled the boat into line with Dennis Hopper's boat. And the machine gunner is just nuts and shooting. He can't see anything. It's very Mad Max-esque, which makes sense because it's the same cinematographer.
Yeah, so, and it's like a post-
Yeah.
Apocalyptic kind of thing.
And the director and screenwriter said, like, that's kind of what they were going for. Obviously, it's just instead of dust and dirt, like,
yeah,
it's all water.
It's really wet, you guys.
Yeah.
In this movie.
So, obviously, there's limited resources. They have their own economies. There's little outposts of humanity. There are boats and people that live on boats, and they have their own code. And Kevin Costner has this awesome Rube Goldberg catamaran. He shoots at one point a... Something's wrong with his normal sail, so he shoots a kite into the air. He has it, like, all at the top of the mast. It's just ready to go. And that pulls the catamaran somehow, and they go super fast. It's a cool boat, though. I do have to say that. But they're all looking for dry land.
Everyone's looking for dry land, but a lot of people also think it's a myth.
Yes.
Well, actually, Kevin Costner seems to think it's a myth.
Because he sailed further than most. And he's never seen it.
But he has access to dirt, you guys. How does that work? You tell me.
Okay. He dives down to Denver and gets it and then comes back up.
Denver? They said it's Denver?
No, but it was supposed to be Denver.
What do you mean?
There How were do you know shots that? Of the like the skyscraper that people recognize or something. And it's like the highest point the that mile Americans high think city. Of. So
right.
He does take Barb down there. Barb. He takes Jean Triplehorn down there. She was Barb in Big Love.
On Big Love. Yeah, we haven't even mentioned Jean Triplehorn, right. Who is she's the fucking love interest. She plays two roles, his fucking love interest and the mother of this kid.
Yes.
And I have some things to say about this from a feminist perspective.
Oh.
Because I fucking hated this movie.
He was real not nice to women.
I mean, I hated this movie on that
Yeah.
level, yeah.
Well, let's think about it.
Anyway.
Post-apocalypse, limited resources.
No. I won't think about that. Fuck you. Go ahead and say what you're trying to say.
So, Barb, or Jean Triplehorn, or whatever the fuck her name is in this movie, and Enola, who's played by Tina Mangerino, end up on the Mariner's boat because he gets captured, they find out he's a mutant, and they're gonna kill him, and then the Smokers come and attack the town. He escapes with Jean Triplehorn and Tina Majorino.
Right. Basically, she's like, I can get you out of here, but you have to take us with you.
Yeah.
To dry land or whatever.
You've been there, haven't you? Dry land? You know where it is.
Yeah, I know where it is.
And we're going?
You and I are. Kid, we've got to pitch over the side.
So he takes them with him when they escape. They catch a big mutated shark thing. They get chased by the smokers. There's other adventures that go on. And then this guy, Gregor, who was the, I don't know, he played kind of like a grandfather figure maybe to Enola back at the atoll. He is played by, what's his name?
I don't know his name. I just know that I recognized him.
He was Mr. Noodle on Sesame Street.
No, he's yeah. Mr. Noodle's brother or uncle or something. He's his brother.
I think he was the original Mr. Noodle, and then they had a different guy come on and say, your brother, Mr. Noodle.
I recognized him.
Oh, yeah.
And I couldn't place it. Yeah, he's kind of this goofy, silly
Fatherly character,
sweet. But when I was watching him, I was like, what is the association I have with him? Because it's like really, there's something dark that I've seen him in. And I realized
I know what it is. Evening Shade. No.
Try again.
Oh.
No guess again.
Sesame Street's the only other thing I know him from.
It was Sesame Street. And yeah, you guys remember that one where like Elmo goes like, you know, he's like, he goes on this journey to find himself. But
and
he
Mr.
Has
Noodle
to,
kills him.
He has to like murder a whole bunch of people on the way and stuff. And it's like, it gets really dark. No, it wasn't fucking Sesame Street. It was The Fisher King.
Mm.
Which is one of my favorite movies and also a movie that that is too painful for me to watch. It's so deeply heartbreaking and upsetting. Anyway, he's the comic relief in this movie, aside from Dennis Hopper. And I thought he was more of a father figure to Gene Triplehorn.
Maybe.
Did she have a
name?
Yeah,
maybe. Well, that's what I was saying, like grandfather to Enola.
What are you drawing?
I don't know.
Oh, Helen, look. Look at the prodigal child's latest division.
Oh, I thought you meant to Gene Triplehorn. Did she have a fucking name?
Probably not.
Because I want to stop saying Gene Triplehorn.
No, she definitely did, but
I'm going to look it up because I don't want to keep calling her that. Her name is Helen.
Thank you. Yes, Helen. There was a little cameo, too, by Jack Black. He was a pilot. Shows up in one scene.
He's, like, in the background. It's weird.
Well, he's in the plane. He's flying in the plane that gets wrapped around the
mast.
I'm
just saying he's not a fucking character. He's
no.
Like,
no, but he was probably pretty young in this. It was early on in his career.
Yeah, I know. I'm saying that's why it's fucking weird.
Yeah.
Because now we know him as like this big fucking deal.
Yeah. So it's important, though. We talked about Gregor a lot, and it seems weird, but it's very, very important because there's a scene where Enola falls in the water, and they're all on the blimp. So Kevin Costner wraps rope around his legs, tells them to tie off the other end, and jumps off the blimp into the water as four jet skis are heading toward Enola.
Well, yeah, they want her.
I need to know about that tattooed girl.
Because she has
the
tattoo on her back.
Yeah, the whole thing is that Dennis Hopper and his dudes are trying to get a hold of Enola because she has this map tattooed on her.
So Kevin Costner dives in, bungee jumps, grabs her, bungee jumps back up, and all the jet skis run into each other and blow up. It was the cheesiest looking thing in the world. And it was so, it was like if they couldn't put rollerblades in this film because it was on water. So they had to add bungee jumping. It was such a 90s thing.
Bungee jumping?
That's
You're
what,
saying
how
that
I
was
felt.
Like a 90s trend that they threw in?
They're like, oh, he could bungee
jump. Oh, that's
jump.
Funny.
Oh, God, it was so, and it looked so dumb.
It was dumb. I'll tell you what the most dumb thing about this movie is, though. And I like what I hated about what made me hate this movie is that, have we said everything we kind of need to say about the plot? Like,
yeah, we just need to talk about the end a little bit.
Here is the reason I hate this movie.
Just one.
No, and there is only really one. Okay. Because without this, I might have been able to view it as sort of a, you know, a bad but entertaining action movie. What really fucking bothered me was, so he takes Helen and Enola on his boat. First of all, she offers herself to him as soon as they get on the boat, because that's what women are
sexually,
for
in this
in this world. There's also a part where this father is offering his daughter so that Kevin Costner could impregnate her.
Right, because he's an outsider, which, and they have a little incest or a little inbreeding going on. Right.
And I actually later, after that scene, I was like, you know, maybe he should have impregnated that person because his like webbed feet and...
He's the future.
That's not like really good for like with the ladies. It's not a very sexy thing to have webbed feet.
It might be in Waterworld. I mean, Helen.
Have we mentioned he has gills and webbed feet?
And a webbed penis. We talked about this.
And he dives way down, and there's a hidden old city down there, and he goes all the way down because he's a fish, basically, and he can get dirt and shit. He takes him on his boat, and then he refuses her the first time. He doesn't have sex with her. And then...
But he touch her boob.
Yeah, he touches her boob in a really awkward way. He's a virgin, I think.
No, I don't think so.
I think so.
Well, he might be because he's
fucking
fish man.
Fucking webbed feet. He's not getting any ladies.
Mm-hmm.
Point is, he treats these women like fucking shit. He is so cruel and...
Abusive.
Demeaning, abusive, condescending. He's an absolute asshole. And yes, you could make the argument this world is a very desperate kind of place. It's dire circumstances. He lives by himself out on the water, but fuck that, because it's still a fucking Hollywood movie.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? This Hollywood movie, like many Hollywood movies, feeds into the fantasy of a man who abuses a woman into falling in love with him. And that is exactly what this fucking movie is about. He keeps threatening to kill the kid, Enola. And at one point, he throws her off the boat.
You're not so tough, you know that. How many people have you killed? 10? 20?
You talk a lot.
I talk a lot because you don't talk at all. And how many?
Including little girls?
I'm not afraid of you. I told Helen you wouldn't be so ugly if you cut your hair.
Doctor, you talk all the time. Storm when you're around.
Enola! Hey! What are you doing? Bastard! She can't swim!
And she almost drowns to death.
As opposed to drowning not to death.
Well, if she were a fish person, I guess.
Mm.
I guess you...
You wouldn't drown.
It would be a different terminology, but...
I think usually when you drown, it's most...
It's pretty fatal?
Yeah, most drownings are
fatal. Very fatal drowning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was about to be a fatal drowning.
Yes.
And of course, Helen dives in and saves her. And then guess what he does? He turns the boat around and decides to go back and pick them up. Oh, what a fucking hero. What a hero. So that happens. So then they're back on the boat, whatever. He's still a fucking asshole to them. He pushes them down. He hits them when he feels like it. He is an abusive fucking asshole. And no one's talking about it. And when I say no one's talking about it, I mean those reviews that you read and the shit that's out there about this movie.
No
one is fucking talking about this.
No one mentioned that.
I'm so fucking angry about it because it is the thing that stood out to me the most in this movie.
Jen, you didn't even mention the worst part.
So he's still a fucking asshole. This dude, they find this other dude out in the water because that's what you do. And when you find another person, you trade with them. And so Kevin Costner trades this guy. What does he want from him?
He wants resin, I think, to repair the boat.
To repair his sail and stuff.
But he doesn't have resin. He has paper.
Oh, that's right. He has one piece of fucking paper. And they never explain why that is so valuable either. But whatever. He trades Helen because she's his property somehow, even though she fucking isn't. He trades Helen to this guy for a piece of paper in a jar.
For half an hour.
Right.
Half an hour. You trading or not?
Don't!
Shut up.
She has no say. He just decides that this guy is going to take her down into the bottom of the boat and have his way with her. And at this point, I was like, are you fucking kidding me. He is the hero of this movie. We're supposed to be rooting for this guy. But guess what? I mean, at first I was like, oh my God, everyone's just going to let this fucking happen.
Everyone, meaning?
Meaning Kevin Costner. Enola.
Kevin Costner.
And of course, what happens is that he changes his mind.
No. See, I didn't read it as him changing his mind. He took the paper out and read it and started scanning it really quickly. And then he went down. Like, I think that was his plan the whole time. He got what he needed. And then he went down and told the guy, no, get off my boat, and killed him in a fight.
I disagree. Because the reason I disagree is because when he was looking at, after he looked at the paper, there was this pause and he made this face like, maybe I shouldn't let him rape her. And so then he stops it, and yes, he kills the guy and whatever. And now we're supposed to think he's a fucking hero.
Mm-hmm.
Then, after he has tried to kill Enola and been an absolutely abusive asshole, then there's a scene where he is teaching her how to swim because she doesn't know how to swim, which is weird because you live in Water World. And he says, I've never met a person who doesn't know how to swim before. So Helen wakes up one morning or something. She looks out and he's teaching her to swim in the ocean.
Enola! Enola, what are you doing? They're those monsters! Don't kill her!
Oh, they're asleep now. Hands around my neck. Put the water to your arms and legs how to move. They're going down.
Hold your breath.
So he's teaching her to swim in the ocean, and it's supposed to be this moving moment. And this is when Helen falls in love with him. And you can see it in her face. And it's this just, oh, the child is laughing and he's smiling, and he cares about her. And you can see that now. I was so fucking angry by this point in the movie that this guy is the hero of this fucking movie. Dennis Hopper is no more a villain than Kevin Costner in this fucking movie. Kevin Costner's a fucking asshole. There is absolutely nothing about him, especially since he has no backstory. I mean, you're supposed to see that he has a heart eventually, like he comes around. But
except we'll talk about that.
He's at the end. Fucking asshole. Dennis Hopper is no worse than him. In fact, Dennis Hopper, I would say, is more of a hero because he's at least fucking funny. He also, he does kidnap the kid, and do they tie her up at one point?
Yeah, they have her tied up initially, and he's like, don't do that.
What is this? Get those chains off her. What are we, barbarians here? Goodness gracious, sakes alive. Come on out of here, you big nasty animal, you.
Rub-a-dub-dub.
You want to come over here and sit on my lap? No? How about a cigarette? Nothing like a good smoke if you miss your mom. Never too young to start.
He never actually abuses her. No one ever actually abuses her. I'm not saying it's okay that they kidnapped her. What I'm saying to you is Kevin Costner did worse shit.
Yes.
To her and her mother than Dennis Hopper.
But Kevin Costner, changes a few times and fixes it after he creates a problem. But we'll talk about this more at the end.
Well, that's all I have to say about that. Yeah. First of all, this movie was really disturbing.
Yeah, well, it's a post-apocalyptic, action film.
But yes. And so, if I had seen this as a kid, it would have fucked me up. I would have had a hard time with this. But I honestly, I thought this movie was kind of amusing in a bad way. You know, this is bad and it's amusing. Until they got on his boat.
Yeah. He's just silent and angry most of the time.
And abusive to women.
He holds them down and cuts their hair off with a big long knife or a hatchet or something. You think he's, they think he's going to murder them. Because he's been talking about killing them since they got on his boat. It's pretty bad. But at the end, they find dry land. They walk into this hut on this beautiful, lush island. And they find two skeletons on a bed.
Oh, that's right. I forgot
about
that.
And Enola opens up a music box? And she says,
I'm home.
That's right. Yeah, well, there are a bunch of parts that we didn't mention where Enola is drawing things.
Yeah, she draws trees and other things that none of them have seen.
Kevin Costner crayons. Has crayons. Well, he has crayons, but she was drawing before that. I don't know with what. Anyway, she draws like animals, land animals that no one's ever seen. And people are like, what the fuck? So, yeah. So she, you know, from the beginning, either she has premonitions or she's magical somehow, or she's has memories of this. And so, yeah, at the end, you find out she has memories. So
I have questions, because one of the other versions of this film, the director's cut or something, made it more clear that those skeletons that were on the bed were her parents.
Yeah, no, I got that.
So she was there. How did she get to the atoll and have no... She had memories of trees and stuff, but didn't know what anything was. Why was she tattooed? Why was she sent away from there? Why was she tattooed with the coordinates?
No idea.
Why was it in like Japanese and Chinese? Because she's clearly not Asian.
Yeah, no, they... Well, and this is the thing. Like, they don't explain the only things that matter in this movie. They don't explain, like... So she's supposed to be fucking Asian, apparently. Why didn't she stay there?
Yeah.
How did her parents die?
Because I assume...
Why did she have a tattoo? There are no fucking answers.
Was like a map that was passed down for generations, and they tattooed her so that they would know where dry land was, or they would remember where the highest point on Earth was or something. But no, those were her parents. And she's like... How old do you think she was in this? 8? 7? 9?
I don't know.
She wasn't 9, that old. 10, yeah.
8.
So people
like
have been living on dry land within the last 10 years. There have been.
Yeah, I don't know.
It was
I don't
weird.
Know. I mean, the answer is I don't know. And no one knows because they didn't bother to tell that part of the story. So why even include it? I don't know. Let me mention a couple other things.
Okay.
At one point, Dennis Hopper is drinking Jack Daniels.
Mm-hmm.
How the fuck do they have Jack Daniels? It's been hundreds of years. Hundreds of years, mm-hmm. they said, since. Waterworld.
Yeah, generations.
Became Waterworld. How do they have Jack fucking Daniels?
With a perfect label that's recognizable?
It's so fucking weird. Here's another thing that for some reason it made me laugh really hard. The language of the sea people is Portugreek.
Portugreek, yep.
I mean, it made me laugh really hard, but I'm not sure. I don't remember why.
Well, because that's ridiculous.
It made me laugh so hard. Portugreek is the best they could fucking come up with.
You were just looking to laugh at that point in the movie.
Well, because I was so angry that she fell in love with him. And by the way, they do bone.
They do.
Eventually.
And
we still don't know if he has a webbed penis.
She asks him after, why did you turn me down the first time?
And he says, God.
Because you didn't want me then. Didn't really want me then? Something like that.
You didn't want me. Not really. Something like that. Ugh. And once again, we're supposed to think he's some kind of fucking hero for not having sex with her because he could tell she wasn't into it. But it's cool that he pushes her around and like
maybe that's
throws the kid off the boat defense, and hits them. And
maybe that's his defense mechanism, Jen, because maybe he needs to know that someone's really going to love his webbed penis, you know?
Man, whatever. In the end, he burned up the go juice when he made that big explosion with the jet skis.
Yeah, he dropped a flare.
So the go juice is gone now. I don't know
Valdez. The Exxon Valdez sank.
I don't know how they're going to continue now. They're all going to live on the land? I don't remember how it ended.
Because at the very end, Kevin Costner goes through all these things where he's terrible, he's a loner, he's abusive, but then he saves them and he rescues them over and over and they fall in love and... The girl even loves him because he comes to rescue her and she's talking him up to her captors and he's like mowing people down one by one.
He's very good at boating and he defeats the jet ski people.
Yeah. And he's good at like dropping flares into boats and dodging flames. He's good at turning grappling hooks into zip lines and shooting things.
Did you guys know he has gills?
Yes. So he goes through all these changes and really grows as a character. And then at the very end, he tells Tina Majorino that he has to leave. He can't be on land because he doesn't belong there because he's a fish person.
And I'll have to go now.
You came back for me.
I like you.
Why are you leaving?
Belong here. I belong out there.
here.
It's too strange here. It doesn't move right.
Mom said that it's only land sickness. We're all feeling it. It'll go away soon.
It's more than that.
It's a fucking island.
He just fucking sails off, dude. He's gone. He's like, fuck you guys. I'm going to abandon you now.
Well, I mean, they don't need him. Fuck him.
She did.
Good one.
It's not really. Funny.
Not really a good one or no. Not really?
Well, they probably didn't really fuck either because he has a webbed penis.
No, they did. So they totally did. So, in the end, in conclusion, Kevin Costner fucking sucks. This movie is anti-feminist. Dennis Hopper rules. What's her name? Majorino rules. And that's all I have to say about it. I mean, I like Jean Triplehorn, but I didn't have any particular feelings about her in this movie.
Yeah. I think it was, compared to other action movie, summer blockbuster type movies from the mid-90s, it probably isn't as bad as...
No, it's bad.
It's bad, but compared to some of those, like, some of those are pretty bad too. But this one had just so many other elements that didn't seem to work together. Things were not explained at all. So you kind of felt like a fish out of water the whole time. Yeah, just how much of a dick Kevin Costner was. I didn't give a fuck about him.
No. And he's the hero of the movie and he's not a fucking hero.
And he wasn't badass enough. You know what I mean? Like, he killed all these people.
He's pretty badass. That's the only thing that he had going for him.
There was something about the action and the fight sequences. I don't know. There was that one sweet time when he was underwater and he swam like a dolphin and then jumped up onto his own boat. He like shoots out of the water.
Oh God.
That was pretty sweet.
Was it though?
I mean, if you're going to be a fish man, you got to do that at least once.
If you're going to be a fish man, you got to, like, be a fish on your boat.
Here's the thing, Kevin. You're going to play a fish man. Okay, I'm sold. Let's make this movie.
I thought this episode was going to be really funny. We haven't said anything funny. Do you have any jokes to tell here at the end? Here's the thing. Okay, let me just, since you had sort of final thoughts on the movie, what I will say is the concept is cool. I give it that. It's a cool fucking concept, like for the ice caps to have melted, and it's not even that far-fetched. We're not that far from this. And the whole idea of humans trying to live on water is really interesting and also really terrifying.
I do think about. I haven't done the math because I don't know how, but I do think that the volume of water that it would take to cover Earth like that doesn't exist on Earth. Like, if all the polar ice caps melted, if all the ice on Earth melted, I don't think it would be quite that high. So I think it's a little far-fetched.
Whatever. Anyway, I just think it's a cool concept. It's a cool take on the post-apocalyptic thing.
It's a very expensive take.
Fucking
I mean, I think
Jesus.
That's why it's so unique, because filming everything on water, Jesus Christ, what a pain in the ass.
This movie is not about anything except water, and it's a whirl of water, and that's the end.
All right, thanks for listening.
They found dry land in the end. I don't know how to wrap this up. Let's say something funny. Go, Micah. Say something really super funny. That. Okay, ask me to say something funny then.
We already talked about webbed penises. What else? What else funny is out there in the world?
You don't want to ask me to say something funny.
Say something
then?
Funny.
Balls.
Balls are always funny.
Always.
This movie did need more balls. I saw zero balls in this movie.
We didn't see any boobs either. I think it's PG-13.
We saw Jean Triplehorn's naked behind, though.
We did?
Yeah.
We saw her ass?
Yeah, she had, like, tearaway seaweed clothes.
We have not even talked about their fucking clothes, which is the best part of this movie.
They're made
I don't know what they're wearing.
Fish skin and
fish
seaweed.
Skins. But I don't know if they're actually made of seaweed.
Jean Triplehorn's are, like... She has, like, quick release
I think
on this
that
shit.
Kevin Costner probably, like, his character probably would have dressed like that before the ice caps melted. You know what I mean?
Well, he didn't exist then. Fish people...
I know. I said probably would have, didn't I?
But he wouldn't have because he wouldn't have been... It wouldn't have been a water world.
That is another thing about this. It's cool. The concept of him, of people evolving is also really cool. Like, they... The thing is that they could have done some really cool shit with this movie, and they dropped the fucking ball.
Well, did you see the bungee cord scene?
I saw that he bungee jumped.
He invented bungee jumping. That was cool.
All right. Well, that's it. Thank you so much, as always, for listening. We appreciate you very much.
Wait, why weren't his hands webbed? That'd be good for swimming too, right?
He hasn't evolved that far.
I know, but the toe webbing is so small, it can't really give you that much...
You kidding me? All your power comes from your feet, Micah.
Yeah, but it's just a tiny little, I mean...
I don't think you understand how webbing works.
Oh, I understand how webbing works. We'll get into another episode.
Are we getting into our sex podcast territory?
I never saw that webbing there.
We're also going to start a sex podcast, in case you haven't listened to us before. Just so you know, it's also called I Never Saw That.
It's very confusing. They're both tagged as explicit in iTunes, so we get a lot of complaints, but what can you do?
But one, the artwork is a lot dirtier than the other. So, you know, whatever you're in the mood for, we got it all. We have everything that you're in the mood for.
Nobody's ever been in the mood for that, for this fake sex podcast that we're talking about.
Anyway, thank you so much for listening, everybody. We appreciate you so much. We really, really do. We've had several new people join our Facebook group in the last week, and I'm so stoked about that. Welcome to our new members, if any of you are listening. That's just really cool. I hope this episode doesn't make you want to leave our Facebook group or just, like, never listen to us again. But I guess I have no control over that. If you haven't joined our Facebook group, please do so. It's really fun in there, and that's where... Honestly, if you want to have a say in what we talk about, you got to join our Facebook group or become a patron on Patreon. And then you can also have a say in what we talk about. All right. So that said, how about if you like us, tell one friend about us today.
In person. Maybe a stranger.
Yeah.
Randomly in the store.
Tell one person today.
Or it could be a friend. That's easier and less creepy and less likely to get you arrested.
Man, if you get arrested for the sake of this show, I'll bail you out.
Post your mugshots in our Facebook group, please.
Man, you will be a hero. Actually, I will get your face tattooed.
On her face.
On my body somewhere.
Oh.
If you get arrested for us. All right, anyways, thanks to Minus Violet for our music.
Thank you to Fifi Folios for hooking up all our internets.
Thanks to Graham McCray for our artwork.
Until next time.
See you in the 90s. 90s.